Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mbuliwa Gabaza, and for today, we are in the world of... It's an interesting one because, you know, people have different words that, you know, sometimes get, you know, overlain on each other. Communications, marketing, you know, brand building and others that are all thrown in there. But the company does call itself Marketing and Communications. So we are going to be chatting with the team from Duo. This is a company that I interact with on a regular basis in my line of work, you know, at Business Day. And for today, we are talking to the CEO, that is Judith Middleton, just to get a sense of what's happening there, some of the trends that they are seeing in the sector, and also at the same time, you know, getting a look at how, you know, technology continues to influence, you know, and also change some of the prospects in that particular sector. Judith, greetings to you today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Mbuliwa.
All right. So I have thrown many words around. I've thrown the words marketing, communications, you know, out there into the world. Duo Marketing and Communications, the elevator pitch, you know, on Duo.
So our business was founded in 2004 as a marketing and communications specialist agency for tech companies. Marketing and communications because we wanted to be the total outsourced marketing partner for tech companies in Southern Africa. The business was really founded on the premise that, you know, marketing is an ever-evolving industry. Communications is a deep vertical within that industry. And we wanted to be the partner that's able to provide the full ambit of services to tech companies.
And when you, one of the things that I was then curious about is why tech companies, you know, specifically, what are you guys seeing in the early 2000s that gives you impetus? I know that we're just coming out of the dot-com bubble. A lot of things are happening in South Africa, the internet, you know, telecommunications. I think that's the time when the country was moving from 2G to 3G, all of that stuff. Yeah. Like, what's happening at that time? Yeah.
So I moved back to South Africa. I was privileged enough to join the Cape IT Initiative. It is a public-private sector partnership to build Cape Town's ICT community. It was the heyday of tech. It was the dot-com boom and bust time. We were seeing likes of Shuttleworth, Willem van Billion with Mosaic. We were seeing lots of beautiful, great South African success stories reach the global space. And the Cape IT Initiative's mission was to trumpet South Africa, was particularly the Western Cape at that time, and put us on the global stage. So my job was the head of marketing team. And Cape IT Initiative built an initiative called Bandwidth Barn. It was the first ever tech incubator on the African continent. It was a fascinating time in terms of growth. Remember back then, VC, venture capital, was a bit of a swear word. We weren't seeing much investment coming in. South African tech entrepreneurs were bootstrapping. That's fortunately changed as we've built our brand globally. But this tech incubator was in high demand, and we saw this tech industry growing phenomenally. So my role as the head of marketing for the Cape IT Initiative and the Bandwidth Barn really gave me insight into the tech community. A lot of agencies were coming in, promising them the world, doing big ad campaigns, but not really taking accountability for results. And so Duo was born out of that space. We were probably one of the first niche tech agencies in the country, homegrown, not global. And really the purpose of that was to support these tech entrepreneurs as they came out of this incubator and were ready to grow and scale into new territories and markets. And that's exactly our sweet spot. We want to be the partner to tech companies as they grow and scale into Africa, into Europe, into any other global territories.
And over the years, any, you know, maybe highlights or, you know, big success stories that you can point at that people might know?
Intersect is a phenomenal Western Cape success story. They were our client for a while, and we were able to partner with our global Plexus member in Germany to support the growth of Plexus into into Germany. Yeah, there've been so many. I think about what is success. Success is when you're having an impact, right? And actually, I don't think there are any of our clients at the moment that, or over the years, that haven't had a massive impact on the ecosystems that they're involved in, from med tech to fintech to payments to, money transfers. These things are fundamental to the hygiene of our economies. And I think that we are very privileged to play a part in the communication and being almost the drummers for these businesses, where we can actually showcase their impact, their services, their products across markets. It's a real privilege.
One of the things I'm quite curious about, and I was really glad to be talking to you, is because we've had a number of your compatriots, on this platform, whether it was Atmosphere and King James before the Accenture acquisition, the likes of WPP, Avatar, and others that play in a, I'm just going to call it a similar space, because I know that the offerings tend to be what you call this different, is how have you perhaps seen, I guess, the environment or the, what can I call it, the industry develop over time, right? Because in certain instances, still, you guys started all those years ago, 20 years ago, but even still, now in 2025, many companies still look at communication strategies, for example, as something that is reactionary and not something that they proactively do. It's only when someone gets into a little bit of a crisis that they decide, oh, perhaps I need some good PR around me. Or you see your competitors having big marketing campaigns, and then you decide, oh, actually, maybe this is something that we do. That's me looking from the outside inside. But you as a player inside, how embracing has the technology community been, for the type of for the type of work that you do? And are you happy with the positioning of South African tech all these years later?
So I'm going to take a controversial stance to that answer, because I don't think the PR industry has moved fast enough. I never worked in an agency. So the model of Duo's commercial value was built by listening to customers and modifying strategies and value accordingly. The average traditional PR agency at the time was swapping time for money and billing clients on an hourly model, and reporting on media published articles, right? That we came to learn was not an effective way of delivering value. Our clients need to understand how PR is moving the needle for them. So Duo, because it's PR and digital marketing, is able to do both. So we're able to pressure test ourselves and sanity check ourselves on how PR is actually moving the needle for our clients commercially. So yes, there's brand visibility, which is quite difficult to track beyond sentiment and share of voice. But there's really little point in getting 200 published articles a month if it's actually not doing anything for businesses. And we've seen that. We've seen that happen. A, that takes a lot of resources and time from the executive layer of the client. And then, if it's not translating into value, you will be fired. So our model is quite unique, in that it measures the impact of our work. We're mirroring internally. The second element is the digital marketing side. That has become a really competitive space, because analytics will give you a true lens on your value. And when you can measure the impact of an investment, a digital campaign, in Google Analytics, You get to show your client the impact of your work. And so that becomes really exciting when PR is a component of a bigger engine room and we're able to report on true return on investment. And we're also able to, with digital, to iterate, refine, and rework content if we need to ensure that we get to the goalposts for every campaign's goals. It's exciting times, I must say. We have shifted completely away from sort of AVE-based media reporting to digital impact reporting. We use Looker Studio, where we can give a power executive, a CEO, a screenshot of the impact on our very first slide. And then for CMOs or marketing managers or PR managers, the report will go into the detail with clickable live links. So at any one point, we can show high impact, high value. And if we're failing, we can see it. But then if we're failing, we always have the lens to be able to say to us, actually, we need to change strategy here. We need to change tack. And that's where the relationship with your clients becomes really valuable. You can say, this campaign fell flat. This campaign is working really well. These are the levers. This is why it's not working. These are the anomalies in the data. We've even had clients come to us to test market fit and product fit in the market, which is really fascinating because you can do a digital campaign and test the viability of that product in the market. Is it saturated? Is it something that people want? Are they interested in buying? And often the data trends will give you that analysis. So you might have high click-through rates and a very few conversions. Does that mean there's lack of trust? Does that mean that there's lack of visibility? Does that mean there's lack of education? They are often very interesting insights that we can glean from the data, which is fascinating.
I was actually saying to someone the other day who's running an agency, and they were talking about what were they talking about? The words will come back to me, but it's basically the idea that in the same way that in the sh in physical retail, suppliers, let's say you're an FMCG. A supplier like Unilever can, display their ads in a store or pay for, preferential placement, in a particular store. That in digital marketing, there is a parallel where if you're a company and you have a digital audience of some sort, you can actually use that data as a way to get what you call this, as a way to get your suppliers to directly, channel their communications in a targeted way, to the consumers, on the other side, allowing companies, businesses, and brands to actually monetize the data that they have, around their organizations. And I was saying to him, it almost feels as if the best thing about digital marketing, to your point, is that it's almost to taken away the spray and pray approach of billboards, radio, print, etc., where you almost have to guesstimate, what the impact of a campaign, of an advert, of a spread, of an article actually is, down the line.
So the data is the gold. In many industries, but in ours, it's incredibly powerful to see how that will inform future strategies. But also, what we're finding is that the typical traditional PR professional doesn't have those skills. And so at Duo, we have a digital handbook to actually help convert traditional PR people into foundational skill to success.
If I may ask, in 2024, 2025, depending on when someone is entering the workforce, if we're saying that it's recent, it's now, right? What's the disconnect? Why is it that PR professionals don't have some of those requisite skills? One would almost think that in the digital business environment as within which that we're all operating, that these skills would almost be a given.
I think there are colleges and tertiary institutions that teach digital, and then there are colleges and institutions that teach PR. But the bridge seems to be missing.
Okay, I think enough said, on that front. And I think the fact that we are talking so much about digital helps us to maybe get a sense. One of the biggest trends that I've seen, and one of the biggest things, is the fact that when we think about people in marketing, people in communications, and you could also add advertising on top of all this, people have always just thought about it from a creative point of view. But from everything that you're talking about, there's a huge data lens that you have to pick. But the other piece is it almost feels as if companies such as yours have become tech companies as well, right? In of themselves. How have you seen that influencing, how you operate? I guess it helps that you from the outset, you were about the tech, but you've almost become a tech company yourselves.
We've had to. And, with COVID, we closed all our offices, which was a demand-led decision by the team. It helped our team to sort of disperse out of the cities and live better quality lifestyles. Also helped us resource from various different pockets across South Africa. So we have people all around the country now in some quiet little pockets of Jeffreys Bay. And what that meant is that we had to have technology to build a resilient workforce and a workflow system. So, when we expanded from Cape Town to Joburg, we built our solutions into the cloud. And we used Google and we used Monday.com. They're both very kind of robust global systems of efficiency and transparency and collaboration. And that's really enabled us to work from anywhere, work with systems that are efficient. We don't do timesheets and kind of clock in and clock out type. We work on an outcomes-based methodology, both for our clients and for our employees. So, it's about impact. It's about results. And it's also the underlying technology that enables that efficiency. And I think we really do get that right. But you're right. We're privileged to sit in the technology space where our clients are teaching us daily about best practice solutions, efficiencies, security, all those great things. I mean, we're learning and listening all the time.
Do you have your own developers and all of that stuff in house?
No, we haven't had any need for developers because our clients are there at a drop of a hat to enable. There's been no need for us to have in-house developers, no.
All right, cool. One of the reasons why I asked about that is because as Duo, you guys recently launched what you call your global studio, offering. And when I was just reading about it, I was just trying to maybe get a sense in my head, and maybe you can help to perfect this, to say, how is the global studio different from, the overall company? Because my understanding is that, these are specialist tools, specialist services to tech companies, to help them, to improve their brand communications and all that. But at least to my understanding, before you and I spoke, that had essentially been what Duo Marketing and Communications has been about. So what's the difference between where you guys began and this offering that you have today?
So where we began was as a tech specialist PR and digital marketing agency for sub-Saharan Africa. So our target audience in the local environment is tech companies who are growing and scaling. We don't necessarily work with startups. I have enough scars on my back from this. I love the innovation, but we're ready to move into the scale-up space. When the studio came to fruition, that serves a global tech agency who has tech clients. So we are part of two international agency groups, Plexus and The Collectivist. And through listening and careful collaboration with these entities, we've come to understand that A, there's a skill shortage of real deep tech specialists when it comes to marketing and PR. And secondly, South Africa is in a very good position from an exchange rate perspective. We're also known on the international stage as having a bit of a sixth gear, and South Africans are known the world over to go the extra mile. So there were two reasons why we built the global studio. A, demand from our colleagues and friends in these plexus and collective networks to support their agencies in a cost-effective way. And the second thing, in conversations with potential investors over the years, they've often said, well, you know, you have one clear revenue stream. When will you diversify? And so this is also part of the diversification strategy.
All right. And when, so I'm guessing that with everything that you've just said, this is more a external facing, you know, type of offering, you know, to SA. This is, as the name suggests, you know, global, where you're servicing clients that are, you know, outside of SA. Are you servicing them with your existing staff in South Africa, or have you been able to maybe resource that global offering with maybe people from other parts of the world?
No, the purpose is to keep costs down and keep value high. So we use our existing network of both full-time employees, contractors, and freelancers, because we have to keep a tight hold on the costs value proposition, as well as the quality, because as we said, there's a very nice brand understanding of Duo globally through these networks. So the business is really, it will come from the Plexus network and the Collectivist network. We're not going out saying, you know, we're available to do cheap labor in Africa. That's not really the value proposition. we don't want that message heard.
All right. Because I was actually going to ask, do you see, would I be correct in assuming a parallel between that offering, you know, to your global network versus how South Africa has become a hub for BPO services in a sense?
Yeah, I mean, South Africa has become a hub for BPO. It's really lovely to see our skills on the global stage. But as long as those skills don't move offshore, right? We want to keep those skills here. We want to bring the business here and then build economically. We want to build here rather than, you know, losing the talent to a global brain drain. So for us, that the goal is really to bring business to Africa, to bring business to South Africa, and keep the high quality labor available for our local market, but also for the international market.
Do you see anyone else doing this in the market? I guess I'm trying to get a gauge of what or who you might be competing against, or do you find that this is maybe something that's unique, you know, to your global network, whether it's Collectivist or, you know, the other one?
No, I think it's not unique at all. I think there are a lot of agencies in Africa servicing global clients. But our model isn't necessary. It's about serving global agencies as sort of white labeled support, right? We don't always have to go in as a third party. We can go in as part of a group. I don't think it's unique at all. I just think that the timing of it is really important, with the exchange rate being so favorable for Europe, US, even into the Asian markets. The South African rand is poor. And so that gives us the advantage, right, to be able to price competitively without losing and compromising on skill.
And how do you see professionals benefiting from something like this, because like you said, there are a lot of agencies, you know, in the market, a lot of people servicing something like this. Do you see this as something that's being accretive, you know, to the market for professionals?
Definitely. I think we've got to retain people, good quality people, and remunerate them effectively. And that means, you know, there's a war on talent locally. We've got to make sure that we provide healthy environments for people to grow and thrive. And that means remunerating them at a rate that feels, you know, wholesome for the industry. We don't want to become cheap labor because that impacts our people, it impacts our industry, it impacts our reputation when there's just a revolving door of skills and talent coming through your agency. I mean, that's exactly, you know, I think the one of the key problems in this industry is that there's a mismatch between what people understand skill and value to look like versus what agencies demand. And that there's conversations on both sides of that coin to be had. But I think we're not a healthy industry. The PR and marketing industry is not a healthy industry in South Africa. I mean, I'm going to be frank about that. Well, most people arrive at Duo quite traumatized. Some might leave more traumatized because they haven't understood what value looks like to us. And there seems to be a mismatch in expectation, certainly a mismatch in terms of salary. And I think there's a lot of abuse on both sides, to be really honest, without getting too controversial. I think that, you know, there are lots of retrenchments when big international clients resign an account. You'll often find a mass exodus of people and human capital from agencies. So, you know, how do we protect our people? How do we align our expectations with people who are coming in, expectations? And how do we find a healthier industry? I mean, that's really top of mind for me at the moment.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I often quote a statistic that came from the South African National Editors Forum for our industry, you know, because you know, for the PR part of you know, the work that you do, there's a lot of interface with people in the newsroom, such as myself, and our newsrooms have been shrinking. And I remember we had a conversation with SANEF just before COVID, and they highlighted that in 2010 there were about 10,000 professionals in the newsroom, and that by that time, just before COVID, it was about 4,500, which gave a 55% attrition rate. And when you look at the Daily Maverick, when they were talking about getting, you know, squeezing down their workforce by 15%, they extended that statistic to say that about 70% of professionals in the newsroom have been lost over the last decade, you know, to sort of show how dire that situation, how dire that situation has been. But I've also heard, you know, from my comrades on the other side, you know, of the aisle in the PR industry, you know, talking about similar trends. So it's very interesting you talking about, I guess, some of the trauma that professionals are facing, and you know, actually experiencing how tough the environment is. One of the things I was actually gonna ask is, do you see the global studio offering as perhaps being I don't know if I can call it a hedge, you know, against, you know, perhaps what's happening in the local economy, that you can maybe protect some of your earnings, you know, by bringing in an increased amount of, you know, that business from, you know, some of those global clients?
I mean, interesting that the journalists who are being laid off have often find a very comfortable home in PR. We've benefited from that. But let's not be ignorant to say that the circle turns, right? We know that media houses are suffering, and we have to bring budgets to the media houses, right? We otherwise also the industry collapses, right? So I think it's understanding the ecosystem, understanding the weaknesses, the vulnerabilities, and then looking at how we work together as a broader industry to make this work. So the global studio will hire a lot of journalists who are now on the market for freelance roles. Yes, absolutely. And there are also creative roles, there are digital specialist roles, there are project management roles. There's traffic management roles. So I really hope to resource up to about 30. at the Global Studio in the next year. Again, that really depends on quality and talent. We are fastidious. Our mission is to be Africa's best tech, PR, and digital marketing agency. And so skills absolutely matter. We want champions. We're looking for the best. But to answer your question about building the hedge, I certainly hope so. I hope you'll interview me in 5 years' time and say, absolutely, this is done. Because
Yes.
I really want to see that happen.
Yeah, no, definitely. And from a resourcing point of view, I heard you just talking about Global Studio, maybe aiming to have, 30 people there in the broader Duo, universe. What does your team look like, at the moment?
Our team is diverse, young, dynamic, results driven. And I think that's what makes you a champion player at Duo, is when you can really understand, A, how your clients' businesses make money, and then how do you add value towards that goal. The team are very much driven towards strengths. So there's no two people that do the same thing. We work on a strengths-based methodology rather than just capacity. So our approach to client service is the best of the collective. And so you could find three people on working on a client, or you could find four people, or maybe just two. The team is sort of just shy of 15 at the moment. But that's a combination of specialists, right? So again, it's about, if the client needs digital services, do they need content writers? Do they need web developers, or do they need SEO specialists? Those are very deep avenues of specialty. And so really, most often it's the collective that serves our clients.
And from a trends point of view, one of the things that always one of the areas that I cover the most is what people call the gig economy. Some people call it contract work, but in creative circles, this has always been, known as freelance work, and it's a mainstay. Across the board, whether you're talking, the marketing and advertising piece, whether you're talking the content creation, film, television, radio, across the board, there's that model has tended to be there. Don't you find it interesting that that the rest of the corporate world is almost feels as if it's moving as well in that direction? There seem to be less and less permanent roles nowadays, and yeah, a professional almost seems to be a portfolio of, different networks that they are part of and, servicing.
I love the gig economy. I think for this country and for people who are deep professionals, I think it's a win-win. For our business, it has been the reason that we can provide excellence, because we tap into resources that perhaps in the early days we couldn't afford in a full-time capacity anyway. So, we have the likes of ex-Business Day journalists working on our team. We wouldn't ever be able to afford them full time. But to bring them in a capacity of a media trainer, or, to give that lens of objectivity, or to bring them in as content specialists or media crisis managers, those are people you perhaps don't need on your books full time, but when you can tap into their knowledge and skills as you need them, it becomes incredibly valuable for the customer. So,
No, definitely.
I think we should be doing more gig economy. Our labor laws are tough, let's face it. And I think that's the resistance from corporate, is that, we want to grow our businesses, but human capital in this country is very tricky to manage. It is, and I think if you speak to any agency owner, it is the hardest part of running a business in this country.
Yeah, definitely. And it, I guess from an economy that is trying to grow itself, and also at the same time be seen as a place where, you can do business easily, increasing that ease of doing business does become, a big issue. So it is an interesting one. Before we let you go, Judith, for someone who's starting out in the industry, we've spoken to you as someone who's now got decades, in the game, decades, and you know, starting out as being part of that Cape Tech ecosystem and then seeing that need for marketing and communication along with the tech companies, helping to grow some of those, South African properties, taking them to the world, etc. Your advice to people that are perhaps starting out now, what's the break-in? What's the approach, especially at a time where... And I ask it because we're having a technology-centered conversation and, a lot of creatives are feeling very threatened right now by the same technology that we're talking about. You know, whether it's creative writers, you know, who feel threatened by, the ChatGPTs, the Geminis of this world, video specialists, audio specialists. We're seeing so many tools coming in now where, you know, people feel like their jobs are, you know, falling away. I think OpenAI demonstrated some graphic tools just the other day that I'm sure have a lot of graphic designers, worried about, you know, what they're thinking about. So for people that are starting out now or a little bit younger in the game and they're trying to see how they can also have longevity, such as yourselves. So what's the word from that point of view?
Understand how you can add value. Ask how you can add value and then do it. I think as young professionals, I certainly felt like I was expected to know. And when I released that fear and found the courage to say, actually, I don't know, can you help me understand? My life changed. But I don't know why it is that PR and marketing people feel that they should have the answer. And actually, this is why Duo is called Duo, is because it's a symbiosis or nothing. The tech specialists have their knowledge. We have our knowledge of best practice. And only together can that create the alchemy. The tech specialists can't do it alone. We can't do it without the tech specialists' deep understanding of the knowledge, the industry, and the competition. And so it's about asking the right questions. When it comes to new innovations and technology like AI, you know, this is our life going forward. This is the new way. And I think we've got to find our value stream inside of it. And that's not difficult because there will be things that AI cannot do in terms of historical understanding lenses. I mean, even think as simple as writing a case study. Generative AI can't do that. So understand what you can and can't do. Use AI to make your life easier, I think. But do not be tempted to use AI to cheat, because that's where we're seeing the biggest fault line with our industry. People cheat in applications. They cheat even in recorded interviews where we're seeing scripts running in the background. Don't do that to yourself. It's the surest way to fail. So integrity matters, and integrity, I think, is what wins the race in every instance in our game.
Integrity matters, and integrity is what's going to help you to win the race. That's where we end off today's conversation. It has been a great one, just getting an understanding of what's going on in the marketing and communications landscape. Just talking to Judith about what's going on, with Duo, getting a sense of that journey, over the last 20 or so years, where things began, where things are now, and some of the big things that are driving, the sector right now, and how Duo has been responding, to some of those trends. Very interesting story just around, Judith being part of the tech ecosystem in Cape Town, seeing the need to get to acquaint, all of those tech players with the world of marketing and communication so that those businesses could be elevated, and then helping, those grow over time, and then that has also then helped them to stay in business over time. Even then, she does say that the South African PR industry specifically has perhaps not as advanced as much as it should, because she is actually quite confident about the mettle of the professionals that are coming out of South Africa, and that is actually one of the reasons why Duo has been able to launch something like their global studio as a way to actually service clients in other parts of the world. This is something that is happening in many parts of the continent, but Duo taking advantage of the networks that they are, you know, a part of, you know, from a global point of view, to say that, you know, that in the first instance, that's where they're going to be getting that global business from. One of the big points that, you know, she hammered through the conversation is that we do not want to be known as a place for cheap labor. Yes, the economics work in our favor, but you don't want South Africa to be known as a place or a destination, you know, for that cheap labor. You know, the professionals in South Africa need to be compensated, you know, for the value of talent, skill, and, you know, contribution that they're having. And South Africa tends to punch above its weight in many respects, you know, and that's something that they're going to take on going forward. Also, it helps, you know, favorable currency situation, and hopefully over time it will be used as a little bit of a hedge against some of the things that we see systemically in the business cycle in South Africa. So just running that you know, that parallel structure, you've got your business clients in South Africa, but you've also got the global ones who actually come in with a strong currency, and it maybe helps you to sort of fend off what's going on in the local market. And we spent quite a bit of time talking about the downturn that's been seen in the ecosystem, not only around PR and communications and marketing as well, but just, you know, the broader ecosystem together with the newsrooms, you know, and the like, and the place of the likes of Duo, you know, in helping you know, professionals in the ecosystem make sure that they have something to do. Ending off just talking about the place of technology and how all of the trends around AI, you know, can be used as a tool and not something, you know, that people offload, you know, all of their work with. And the integrity is something that she advocates for. So that's been it. We were in conversation with Judith Middleton. She is the CEO of Duo Marketing and Communications. Judith, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Madiba, and thanks for helping us keep the standard high. We count on you.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So, for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.